God,
God,
grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you? On Zoom, you can raise your hand and somebody will chat with you. Anybody in their first 30 days? At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we'll be discussing Step 12, Part 2. Please help me welcome our panel. We have Pete and Liz.
Yay for us.
And I forgot to ask which one of y'all wants to go first.
He needs to go first.
Pete's going H first. All me. Right, sweet. Well, I will go ahead and do the
it's only audio.
I'm going to go ahead and do the first reading. It's going to be on page 96. Step 12, carry this message to alcoholics. And suppose you are now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And then over to page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Pete?
All right. Hey, everybody. My name's Pete, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey. So my sobriety date is November 18th of 2007, and my home group is the Indian River 12-Step Study Group, which meets on Monday nights over in Virginia Beach. And I appreciate Amy asking for me to be on this panel because it's always intimidating to sit in front of a big microphone, you know, and what you say gets recorded and then potentially sent around the world. So you got to say the right stuff, right? So I don't know the right stuff to say, really, and ask my wife, I really don't know the right stuff to say, you know, in my normal everyday life. But when it comes to, you know, what the book says and what's written in there, and in particular these couple little things right here, I can remember going through this. I can remember reading this the first time, and I brought different big book, not my original one. But I brought the one that I went through the steps with another guy who's no longer with us tonight. And when I was looking through this stuff, the things we highlighted were pretty meaningful. So, I mean, a lot of you guys know, you knew Brad E., right? Brad and I had the experience of going through with our common sponsor the book at the same time. Now, that's just the way we were doing it that time. But when we went through, it kind of gave new meaning. Because when two people are talking back and forth about a step, you kind of get the dominant person's opinion on things. But when you go through it with somebody else, I get another look at somebody else's experience of going through it. And in this first paragraph, you know, it talks about making that second visit with a man when we, as recovered alcoholics, we're going to go hunt these people down, you know, and go find them in places and then keep approaching them. And that was not my experience, you know, so I'm a stalker. I ask a lot of people, I'm a stalker. I will just go and look sad and mopey. And then you'll ask me, what's the matter? And like, would you like some food? Would you like whatever? And I'll eventually say yes. And I do that because I don't like rejection. I don't like to be told no. And that reminded me of what that's like when you have to ask somebody else to help, you know, and that whole sponsorship portion of 12, because that's really what this reading is about. It's about how we work with others and do that sponsorship thing. So when people come up, you know, and ask me to take them through the steps now, I got to remember what the book says and how to do it and adapt it to today's world. You know, and there's some really essential parts in there. I'm supposed to relay my experience, not what the book says, you know, and how that works. I'm available. And I think that's the thing that I learned the most. It's like, I'm not forcing my will on you. I'm not telling you how to do it. I am here available as a sponsor. When you are ready, give me a call. We can do these kind of things. And I remember what it was like having to ask people for help. Because I'm shy, don't like no for an answer. And it's interesting to watch people that have approached me over the years and say, will you help me? Okay, I will help you because that's the right answer. You know, I've got something to give back to you. I've done this. I can make that happen. But all I can offer is that availability. I can't drive their schedule. I can't drive the way they recover. I can't drive the way they react to the situation. So it's really about being there for them when they're ready. And that's kind of what I got out of that first little bit right there. And the last sentence in that first paragraph is kind of telling, because that hurts us to the core. And it says, let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell a story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. We have egos, right? I have an ego. I think that I am probably right in most circumstances for the situation because of my experience, you know, but I don't get to make up somebody else's mind on how they're going to approach recovery and the steps. So if they choose somebody else in the long run and stop calling and stop doing that, I'm not a chaser. I'm not going to call you because my sponsor told me not to be that person. Because that means that I want it more than the other individual. And in the beginning, you know, I was shy. So when I stopped calling my sponsor, he didn't chase me. He told me every time that, hey, I'll be here ready for you when you want to come back. And his wife knows that story because she's in the program too. So it's funny we laugh about that because I took about a 4-month hiatus, you know, between the introduction of step 4 into getting that done and doing a step 5. And the lesson learned there was when I'm ready and when the sponsee is ready, it's up to them to make that push to reinitiate the contact. And I can't let it get in the way. And I'll stop right there because there's a lot right there. And I want to give Liz the opportunity to talk about that stuff.
That's a hard act to follow.
It's not an act. Sure it is.
Hello, my name's Liz and I'm an alcoholic. My home group meets Tuesday nights in this building up in the library. It's Stockley Garden Ladies Lit. It's a women's big book in 12 and 12 study. And I have a sponsor. My sobriety date is December 23rd. 2018. And I've got a lot to talk about when it comes to, you know, sharing experiences. I spent some time in jail. And there's always funny jail stories you can tell, especially to somebody else who's been to jail, because there's the lingo and all that you can talk about. And you know, I've sponsored people who have had some jail time. You know, with getting to know somebody, you just get to know them, and just really, it's listening. Let them tell their story. Just listen. I don't really start talking about the book, the steps and all that, you know, until I really get to know them and make sure they want to do this. I ask them, hey, do you want to call me every day at this given time? And for some of them, you know, there's another book, Living Sober, which has all the practical aspects of staying sober, eating hard candy, all of that stuff. Why don't you try reading a chapter or two and tell me about it when we talk the next day? And that kind of gets them interested in learning how to physically stay sober. And then that kind of, then we get into the book study. But really just getting to know the person. I've sponsored both men and women, so it hasn't been very different, other than the difference between men and women. But going through the book, it's the same. You go through the book the same way. You read from the preface to page 164. I like what the second and third paragraph say, because, you know, if we only got this back, then what do we, you know, then I can do this better. And I can only share my story. I came into these rooms because it was suggested by a lawyer after a mandatory either jail or rehab. And I chose rehab. And that's kind of been my path. So that's all I can share. And I didn't have the luxury of not working the program, because I had to check in with pretrial, and they made me bring a book of all the meetings I went to and of all that. But I do share with them, somewhere along this journey, I started wanting to come to AA. And it's not always fun until you make what you put into it. I tried coming to the meetings 5 minutes late, leaving 5 minutes early. That I tell them that doesn't work, because you don't get to know anybody. And really, for me, what started me wanting to come was the fellowship. And then when I continued to come for the recovery. And that's really all I've got on this. Thank you.
Thank you both. All right. The next reading is also going to be on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Pete?
There's a lot on that page. And the preceding paragraph talks about helping someone else, not on a spiritual plane, because we're supposed to avoid that concept of sponsor worship, where we believe that our sponsor keeps us sober. I never believed that, because when I went through the HAB, as I like to call it, the rehab, they didn't talk about that. They talked about developing a relationship with a power greater than myself that was going to solve all my problems. And nowhere in there did they say that that is your sponsor. Now, we rely on our sponsors for a lot of things. We rely on them for a lot of guidance. But as soon as I started thinking about worshiping the person as opposed to the principle and the program, I knew it was going to get dangerous. And the reason it's dangerous is because people make mistakes. We're all fallible. So when I was coming up and going through that concept, I was taught that my sponsor is the guy who's going to help me learn what's in the book and to teach me the stuff so that I can eventually hand that back. And when that comes the first time, you know, and people would want my advice on everything and to try to help them with their family life and all that kind of stuff, that's not my job. You know, as a sponsor, my job is to share my experience, strength, and hope with the steps and to tell you how I did it, not how it's supposed to be done, but how it was for me. And sometimes that's easy. It's easy when you got a single person or a young person or somebody that doesn't have a family relationship, because I'm not a family counselor. I'm already on marriage number two, so I'm like bad at that stuff. All right. And it's not in my purview to start giving you advice on a whole lot of stuff, but I can talk to you about how the steps worked and how they worked with me. But I've had those people, you know, that want what we get after we do the steps, but they want it now. And I want my life back. I want to be able to go back into the big bed, as they used to say. I want to be able to go to my house and stay there overnight. I want to be able to see my family all the time. And you need to teach me how to do that right now. And that's not a promise I can make to anybody. I can't make you act as a sponsor, you know? So trying to explain that to people is very difficult. And some of those conversations get really hard. And that's when I would get frustrated, or a sponsee would get frustrated with me when I was telling them things that they didn't want to hear. Your family may or may not come back. My original family did not come back. The marriage part of it, obviously the kids are all still there, but I didn't get back everything that the program may or may not have promised. So where's my faith in this program and how that's going to work? Well, I think God had a different path. I think everything that happened to me probably needed to happen, and I needed to understand that. So one of the things that I can do is share with a person who's going through those exact same circumstances, who's had a marriage for a while, who's been drinking almost their entire adult life, who's been ostracized from their family and doesn't live at home and wants to desperately get sober and is looking for ways to make that kind of stuff happen. I can tell my story to them. I can help them along in that way. But it gets really hard because we want it to work out for them too. And it may or may not work out. You know, we're part of the 10% of the 10% that get exposed and then get this for any period of time. So I've got an opportunity just to tell my story. And when it comes to how that family life works, I am not about to tell somebody what to do with their family every morning during your prayer and meditation with your family, because I'm not sure that's how you guys roll at home. I'm not here to judge you on how you're placing all these principles. And when this was written, you know, that's kind of what they were doing. That was their routine. They included the spouse. They included their friends. They were doing all these kind of things around the kitchen table on a daily basis. That may or may not be our lives right now. So all I can do is kind of give you my experience through that and kind of help you integrating these things into your family life, because the lucky ones get to keep the stuff that they thought they were going to lose. The rest of us maybe get to start a brand new life and get a whole new experience through a bunch of things if we're lucky enough to get those, you know, gifts of being sober and what the program is actually promising to us. So I'll pass that to Liz then.
Thank you.
Liz, alcoholic.
Amen.
Relationships, I can certainly tell you what not to do. And I had a sponsee who was married and was in the service in the Navy, and you know, he wanted all of the things he used to do back. That, and the Al-Anon chapters kind of deal with this in the big book, what he used to do back, because he quit drinking for like a half a week, and he didn't understand why, you know. And I kind of just continue to do the next right thing. You do you the best you can. You work the steps the best you can. I can't promise you you'll ever get that back. You may, you know, in my story, my ex-wife bailed me out of jail, took me to rehab, and took me to meetings initially when I got sober, when I came into these rooms. But I wasn't being who I was, because I was already partially out as Liz. And part of this is issues not to do with alcohol, but it is part of how I came into these rooms as I am. And that wasn't a really good idea, but I need you to go through it. And I'm one of those examples that no, the family didn't get back together and it got worse. And the kids resented me for being who I was. And that has taken time to heal. And so, you know, when I work with another person, I don't have a great experience with this. Mine worked in reverse of the way it was supposed to work in the book because of outside issues. But I keep on, you know, when I think about staying sober, continue to do the next right thing. You know, you can't just ask, you know, you can't just ask for the stuff back, but your stuff will come back if it's meant to be. And I can't guarantee, you know, a sponsee, I'm going to, you know, I sponsor several women who are married, young children, dependent on a spouse's income, and they just want to get sober and go back to the way it was. And it doesn't always happen like that. It's in my experience, some of those sponsees have been the hardest ones to keep, to stay sober, because when they go back to those old ways, bad habits come back. And sometimes changes need to be made. And I'm like, I'm the last person. Y'all need to go to a marriage counselor, go to a therapist, go to, you know, go get help. But I'm not getting in the middle of this. You can call me and vent. But I don't have good advice for you when it comes to that. And when I think I have good advice, it's probably not good advice. And I have made the mistake of giving advice like that. Because my experience doesn't have that. It took me, you know, 2.5 years into sobriety to even figure out who I was. And what I do always tell, because it is part of my experience, and I tell this to a lot of people, just become the best version of you and everything will work out the way it's supposed to be. And that's all I have.
Thank you, bro. All right, the next reading is on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
So that's crazy. You know, give up my thinking, give up the way I want things to work out, and put that trust and faith in something that I don't even know what it is, and everything's going to be just fine. Crazy telling me that in the beginning. But that's what I need to hear in the beginning. That kind of stuff. Because I want things the way I want them, when I want them, in the manner that I think they should happen. So there's a lot of step three in that. There's a lot of step two in that reading right there. And it kind of goes back to the previous part that says the only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. I've got to trust in God if I want these promises. And I've got to burn that thought into a brand new person's head by the time we get to this part of the book, you know? And things may or may not be working out well for me or for that person at that point in time. And I want things my way, not God's way. I think that I should have everything back before I'm going to do any extra work. I'm a condition maker. I'm a rationalizer. I think that I'll go to more meetings as soon as I get a more stable life. When I'm not living in hotels anymore and I know people and, you know, the world is right and I feel really good, maybe I'll do some more of this AA stuff. I'll put recovery second because I got to get my life back. So that sounds really sane and logical when that's happening to me, because I didn't know any better. I didn't know how unmanageable my life had become. I didn't know how bad my decisions were. I didn't understand my impact on other people. I thought literally whatever thought went through my head is the way everybody else was thinking, and that they were just the ones that were having the problems. But it's that concept of, I need that spiritual touch of recovery before anything else can happen, is what they're kind of getting at. You know, and getting somebody to understand that and to say, hey, come over next week, let's meet again. Or, hey, let's go to a meeting tonight. Nah, I can't. I'm busy. I got something else on my mind. You know, so what do I tell those people? What do I suggest? I can't make them do things, right? I can only tell them what I did. And I was in that set of circumstances where I wasn't able to come home and stay at home. So I had all night to myself, and all night to myself after I got out of rehab meant that I was able to go pray in a church, in a chapel, because that's what I thought spirituality was, and say some prayers and just pray that I got my former life back. I think by doing that for weeks and maybe months, it kind of got me to the point where, hey, maybe that's not what's supposed to happen. And I would do that before going to a meeting. And I would go to a meeting every day in early recovery, twice on Saturdays and twice on Sundays, because I had to fill out the sheet, you know, you got to go to these meetings.
Fill out the book.
Yeah. And I wasn't there to like just go write somebody's name on the sheet and say, hey, here you go. I went to three meetings this week. I kind of took it seriously. And that's not normally how I do stuff. I'm here to tell you that I'm going to half butt everything that I do until it gets really serious. I'll give you half of my effort, because half of my effort is going to get me by. But when it came to recovery, there was something about what I saw you guys having, what I saw your lives turning into, that, you know, it's just more than that camaraderie and that fellowship and that friendship that I was getting in the beginning. Like Liz said, there was some recovery that started to happen, and I wanted to come for that recovery. And then it started to make a difference, and it got crazy. So I got to walk this path day by day with the thought of God being ever present, that spiritual connection, you know. And I learned how to get a spiritual connection in the beginning of the day by going to a retreat and watching the routine that they had us doing and saying those kind of prayers and making that contact with my higher power early in the day. And I try to do that most days before I leave the house. Because I need God's help. I can't go out there and act like myself without being told to settle down. Relax, will you? What's the matter? What's inside of your head? Why are you acting like this way? hang around for long enough, you'll see it. All right. But when I make that connection, when God works through other people, when I hear the things I need to hear, I know that that spiritual connection works. And I know that that reliance on God actually becomes independence. And that's what I was searching for my entire life. The ability to get to the right place without having to work really hard for it. And what I found is I needed to give up my ways of thinking and reliance upon myself and rely upon God, and that God's path was going to be the right path, and then maintain that spiritual connection on a daily basis. Because when I do it, it works. You guys have seen it. You know it works. But there's something inside of our heads that tells us and makes us forget over the course of the night that, you know, I'm an alcoholic when I wake up, and I'm more of an alcoholic than I am a recovered alcoholic. And I got to do something every morning to tamp that ego down, to get in the right headspace to go face the rest of the world, because I want to bull rush you. I want to tell you how things are supposed to be. I want to get mad at other people because it makes me feel better. You know, but that's not the way recovered alcoholics live their lives. So getting that contact with God, having other alcoholics interact with me is what I need, and maintaining that contact and going to lots of meetings and working with sponsees and carrying that message. Because eventually, if I carry the message long enough, I start to believe the words that are coming out of my mouth, you know, that I'm trying to help other people with, and it starts working. And it's awesome when it works. You know, there are awesome days, and then there are some days where just nothing's working right. But if I stop, pause, ask for help, do those things that the previous pages would talk about, I will get this stuff that step 12 is talking about. And it's awesome, and I want more of it. So with that, I will pass.
Thank you.
This is all about step three. And in early recovery, I had to learn humility, because not only did I go to jail, I lost my license. I had my license revoked. I needed to ask for help. I needed rides. And if I wanted to get my book filled out, and you know, my thinking in early part of recovery, the more meetings I went to, the less jail time I went to. And there's probably some formula that the judge used. If I went to this many meetings, I went to jail this many times and all that. But it wasn't the way it was. And many of you have given me rides here and there that are in the people in this room. And that's kind of, and so I've gotten to listen to your stories and walk hand in hand with you as you've driven me and heard, you know, how you came to believe. Because at that point, you know, in my early recovery, and everybody will laugh, and this is probably something on some bingo card, that Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, was my higher power. I was scared of going to jail. And somewhere in doing these steps, I lost that fear of going back to jail for 6.5 months. And, you know, I want to say it was all recovery, but some of it was just all listening to the people that helped me. And, you know, I've worked the steps with people on the beach, in coffee shops, in my house, anywhere where we can get a little quiet time. And I've taken several women and several men through the steps, and seeing the change in those people from when I first met them to when they've moved on to other sponsors or moved out of the area or are still with me. It's why I keep coming back. And all I've shared with them is how I did it. And some of that is, this is how I did it. This is probably not a good idea. Why don't you try something different? But there was a person who was in these rooms that I got to be friendly with right after the pandemic ended that passed away. And how do you do the third step, work steps 4 through 9? And that's what her advice was. And there's some truth in that. I'm not the most spiritual person. I do quiet my mind in the morning. And I'm really simple. You know, what's God's will? I may, you know, read Upon Awakening. I may not. I may read the third step prayer. I may not. I may just the prayer, God, don't let me be a dick today. And that's all, you know, maybe all I've got. And that's kind of all I have. All I have for this. God, don't let me be a dick today.
Thank you. All right.
That's coming out in the new revision, I think, isn't it? Yeah. That's one of the new changes.
Hopefully there's not a picture book. It's not a picture book.
All right. The next reading is also on page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. Mm-hmm. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol.
All right, so this, when I read it the first time, I said, this is where it gets fun. I can go back and do the same things I used to do, and apparently everything's going to be okay. So the first word in that sentence in that reading is assuming we are spiritually fit. And if I'm the one making the assumption, it's probably not a fact. It's something that I'm going to have to eventually prove to myself that is a fact, because I will assume the best. I will assume that things are going to work out. I will assume that I'm more spiritually fit than I probably am. And I'll just kind of look through life, you know, with glasses that make everything really clear and that I don't have any problems. And I remember when I got out of rehab, one of the first things I did that day, after planning which meeting I was going to go to that night, candlelight, I went home and I threw away all my beer t-shirts. And when I counted them, there were like 14 different beer or liquor t-shirts that I had. Anywhere from scotch to beers I didn't even drink. I mean, it's like, man, where'd that t-shirt drawer go? All of a sudden, you know, I'll just replenish that. All right, I'm good. And I thought that was going to help me. Because if it's not there, I'm obviously not going to think about it. And it got me to thinking about, well, how am I going to live life? You know, if I'm out of rehab now and they say, if I want to succeed, I got to do these kind of things. So I can't now go to a place where liquor served. I can't go to somebody's house. What am I going to say to them? How am I going to make them feel? Do they know I'm not drinking? And then talking to other people when they get to this part of the book, you know, about doing those things. I remember seeing people in early recovery that were servers at a place like Macaroni Grill or Chili's. And their thought is, well, I got to quit my job because there's no way I can go there and not be around alcohol because it's going to make me think about, you know, drinking all the time. And seeing how sponsors handled that. I never had to do that with my own sponsor, but I do remember the first time I had to go to somebody's house. It was a work-related party. And this guy was a Brit, so of course there was a lot of drinking going on. And, you know, how am I going to act? What am I going to do? What's my out? How do I act when people, you know, want me to be who I used to be? Because they all knew I was a pretty hardcore partying. And that's where that book that Liz was referring to earlier really came in handy. Reading Living Sober. Remembering this part of the book as well. But only doing those things when I was actually spiritually fit. And the only way to understand and get good guidance on if I'm spiritually fit is to talk to my sponsor about that do you think I'm ready to go do this? And having that conversation with them, because if I'm out there making that decision by myself, 10 times out of 9, I'm going to get it wrong. And that's more than 100%. All right. So I'm not going to do that. So how do I relay that thought process about using a sponsor to make these determinations? And then I said, well, man, Greenland, that's kind of a cool place. Apparently they serve scotch there. I kind of like scotch. It's got to be single malt because we're not doing that blended junk. All right. And apparently if I go to Greenland, I'll get some scotch because that's what the book says. And I had to think about what that meant. I mean, what are they talking about? And then they get, you know, ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory that he would escape the alcohol problem. I found alcohol no matter where I went. I loved going away by myself. Because that was when I could do it the way I wanted to do it. But when I read that as a sober individual, I mean, what's the point of that paragraph? What are they telling me? That I can assume and resume my normal life if I'm spiritually fit. I can get into places. I can go sit at a bar where they're serving food and get food there. In early sobriety, I should probably do that with somebody else to make sure that I'm doing it right. I should talk to my sponsor about doing it. But the gift of the program is I can resume a normal life if I'm spiritually fit. And for me, I know that spiritual fitness is going to go away in about 3 to 4 days. It's kind of like my half-life. I'm getting a little bit crazy, you know, because years don't mean cumulative sobriety. Years means I've just put a bunch of one days together. All right. And I got to think about it like it's today, because I know exactly how crazy I can get. I know exactly where my thoughts go. The cool thing about it is those promises that we talk about, by the time we get to 9, I'm not thinking about certain things anymore. I'm not having those thoughts. The mental obsession has gone away and I can resume life and I can go out there like a normal human being. And that's the gift of the program. The gift of the program comes with a cost, though. The gift is that I can lead a sober life. But I'm going to lose that sober life unless I give it away. And I got to give it away to other people. If I keep keeping it to myself, this stuff will go away. I'll get a little bit edgy. I'll get a little bit into my own head. I'll get a little bit into me wanting to take control. And I know that that happens. And when that does happen, that just reminds me that I'm an alcoholic. And I've got to do every single thing in this book. So I love it when people say, I live in the solution, man. I live in 10, 11, 12. And that's kind of cool, because when you look at 10, that's really 4 through 9. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing 11 and 12 on a daily basis, that's good. You know, I'm praying and meditating and I'm trying to live this in all of my affairs and to carry the message and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. But I got to remember who I am. I got to remember that I can't fix my problem by myself. And I got to remember that God can and will if he has sought. So I got to do 1 through 3. And then 10 as a cumulative step, 11 and 12 on a daily basis. I can't pick and choose the steps I think I live in, because when I do that, I'm better than the program. I made my own program. I'm playing God. And that's the last thing this world needs, you know, is me telling other people what to do and how to do it. So I'm glad that I found the program of recovery. I'm not glad that I'm an alcoholic. It's a harder life than it's got to be. Mm-hmm. I watch other people, you know, just get through life without the problems that we have to deal with. I'm happy, though, that I was introduced to the program of recovery and that there are plenty of meetings in this area to go to, and that I learned how to look that stuff up whenever I leave the friendly confines of Tidewater or Hampton Roads, and I can get that exact same thing no matter where I go around the world. And it's there for me when I want it. So I don't have to live scared anymore. I just can't make the assumption that I know what's going on and I got to rely on other people. So I will pass.
Thanks. For all of you all that know me, you know, I go to a lot of places that serve liquor. But I usually drag a couple of you guys with me. And most of these have to do with seeing music. But when I first came into these rooms, one of the hardest cravings I ever had was in a hibachi bar that had, you know, did the choppy steaks and all that, because I like sake. And I had to call my sponsor in the parking lot and get my food to go. That's because I was not spiritually fit at that time. And you know, it, we have to have that spiritual experience to relieve ourselves of the alcohol problem. And we have to continually stay spiritually fit. And, you know, when I talk to sponsees, should I do this? What's your motive for doing it? Are you going to a bar because you're lonely? Or are you going to bar to have something to eat because you're hungry? Are you going to a bar? Are you going to have friends that their motives are good? Are you going with sober friends? Why don't you go with a group of sober friends? You know, and I've been fortunate enough to have created the fellowship that I crave. And so when I need to go to see a band, usually there's at least one or two of you folks with me. And my motive is to see live music, not because I'm lonely. And right after things started opening up, I started venturing over to a place close to where I used to live. It was that I went to before I got sober, and I had to stop it because my motives were I was lonely, I was bored, and you know, I was lucky I didn't take a drink at that point. But I was going to meetings every day, and some of the things that we do when we go to see music, and depending on where we go, well, hey, let's stop by, you know, let's let the meeting guide find a meeting to go to on the way. Let's get good and spiritually fit and then go rock out. And that's kind of the way that I've dealt with it. So that's what I tell my sponsees. Find, you know, you guys are going through this early recovery. There's a pack of you all in these rooms. Get to know each other. That's what I had to do. Go meet beforehand, have coffee beforehand, get to know each other. Because there'll be times that you need each other and your sponsor's not going to be available. And that's where your fellowship will pull you through the hard times. You know, I don't know anything about Greenland, and I really didn't like scotch that much. But it was alcohol, so I did drink it. But I think I saw one of these Greenland scotch things at a WIPOC conference or something.
Okay,
so
that's cool.
Anyway, but I constantly remember we're the alcoholics. I'm the alcoholic. The rest of the people in the bar may not be alcoholics, and they can drink the way we want to, and how they drink is none of my damn business. So long as I continue to do the next right thing, I'll be okay. Thank you for letting me share.
I just don't recommend going with a group of 10 people under 30 days of sobriety to Peabody's after candlelight and then thinking that you're not going to lose somebody inside of Peabody's that night just because, oh, we're all sober together. We'll be everybody's protector. We lost somebody that night because we did dumb stuff. Probably should have talked to some people first. But anyway, thought it was a good idea at the time.
I know people still went to Peabody's.
You got to get to the ocean front a little bit more. You've been hanging out here too long.
All right. The last reading, we don't have too much shade. So the last reading, we're going to jump around a little bit here, and then y'all each have a couple minutes to wrap it up. How's that sound? All right. On page 19, none of us makes the sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration is of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we are going to describe. A few fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. And then on page 102, your job is now to be at a place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of light with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. And then on page 103, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. Y'all got about 2 minutes each.
So I must have had a good sponsor who had a good sponsor who had a good sponsor, because the majority of the readings that you guys are picking out tonight on the second part of that step had already been highlighted in a book, and they had taught me to underline and highlight exactly those same things, because that's the promise of this whole thing. We will be able to become of maximum service to another alcoholic if we do the steps. And that's our life's work inside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our job is not just to come in and do what I do naturally and take. Man, I'm just like a full-time taker. When I get to a point where I've got something to give, my job is to give. And today and tomorrow and the day after that, maybe all giving days, there's eventually going to be a take day in there somewhere, because it's not going to work out just right. But if I give more than 50% of my sobriety away, and if I spend 51% at a minimum of my time trying to help others, I will reap the rewards of the program. And I think that's the big takeaway from this whole thing, because it only works when I give it away, and that it's going to be an awesome life. And I will see a fellowship. I will see people grow. I will see people change. And the best thing is that I will change for the positive in the process of doing all that kind of stuff. So thanks again for getting all that stuff out there and giving us the chance to talk about it. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Liz, alcoholic again. You know, I have to work. I have to have a living. But I can live in a manner, and I'm smart enough to do it, to where I can create spaces and time that I can give to others, to take them through the steps, or to give them a ride, or to talk on the telephone, or to just listen. And at the end of the day, all I have is my experience, strength, and hope to share with them. I can share how I did it, and probably more or less how I did it and how you shouldn't do it. And part of this is also being of service to people outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to be maximal helpfulness to everyone, not just to the fellow alcoholic. And so I've, in my journey through recovery, I've taken some steps to do some work, some charitable work outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's just a part of my journey. I need to give back where I've been given to. And that's been in other places as well as these rooms. And this is the greatest show on earth. AAS. I didn't, you know, I thought I was just going to learn not to drink, but I've learned so much more. And not only things that were in these books, but things that people did, and I've learned from others' experience. You know, I've always said this, I'm not much of a spiritual person, but I look at the people in these rooms as the faces of God. And when I'm of maximum service to you folks, I'm being of maximum service to God. So thank you for the share.
Thank you both so much. That was wonderful.
So they did back.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my head is Peabody's team night. That's the only thing I think of. All right. Yeah. It's straight up. Not gonna lie. All right. We're gonna pass the seventh tradition baskets. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Any AA related announcements?
Hey, Jada. Hi, Jada.
All right. Also, right here in this room next week, starting at 6 p.m., we're going to have supper and a speaker.
Well, the big one.
Hot luck. Bring a dish if you can. We would be very grateful if you can. If not, bring yourself, bring a sponsee. It's going to be a blast. 6 p.m. for food, 7 p.m. speaker. It's going to be Brian D. from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, making the trek all the way down here to Norfolk. You definitely don't want to miss it. Might be his first time here. I don't know. Any other announcements?
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
Just a quick reminder to everybody, Assembly is going to be April 5th through the 7th. And Newport News. So you don't have to go and you don't have to have a job to go, but it's going to be there. It's going to be available to you to learn more about what Alcoholics Anonymous does for AA at large and for the groups from here all the way up to GSO. So it's a good opportunity to learn more about what you can do for AA and what AA is doing for all of us. And then June the 8th, just a heads up, Saturday of service.
Yeah.
We don't spread the word enough, so I'm just going to start spreading it now. Bayside Presbyterian, 11 a.m. Come out, learn what all the service structure is in AA, learn about all the service commitments and committees, and get a little story from each of the groups, and then get the delegates report, which is amazing. The delegates report is where the delegate goes to GSO and meets with other delegates from other areas and learns all about what we're going to try and do next in AA, and they discuss things and they vote on things and they bring back all that information to let us know what they're doing at the level of World Service. So it's a great experience. If you've never gone, come on out. And those who've gone, you guys know what the problem feel is. So join us anyway. So
thanks. Awesome. Thank you.
Good job, Bob. The following Friday after we have dinner, supper and a speaker, Candlelight is having their own suffering speaker, and they're having Amy come out and tell her story. So if you want dinner twice in a week, coordinate.
Gotta eat every day.
That's all I got.
What about you, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday?
Okay. All right. We covered it for Calvin. Sounds good. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hand? Point out the literature is available. I'm pointing that out. It's right there to my left, your right. If you need a book, please see a home group member to purchase. The pamphlets are free. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website at simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella, right up Colonial Avenue, next to Kogan's, across from Bank of America. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel again. We feel free to come thank them up here after the meeting.
Forever and ever. Amen. Stay.